From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 28th day of January, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And at the end of our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast. Should be a really cold one, not just chilly, but really frigid. We'll do that with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Along the way today, we'll discuss a couple of different conferences. One that took place over the weekend, and I was here in Decatur. That's where I am today at a sustainability conference. But we'll discuss that later in the year. The one over the weekend was a 4-H conference that had to do with livestock and 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. You won't believe what they've been up to and the kinds of things that they're learning. The other conference is the Organic Grains Conference. That one's coming up in the month of February, and it'll be at the iHotel in Champaign-Urbana. You'll be able to hear a bit more about it and how to register for that. As we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, it is a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online. It's public radio for the farming world at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Kurt Kimmel now joins us here on the Closing Market Report for Monday to take a look at the marketplace. Kurt, thanks for being with us. You and I are recording a bit early today. It's around 11:20 in the morning because I'm at a sustainability conference in Decatur, and we'll be speaking this afternoon during the Closing Market Report. Tell me what the markets have been doing so far today.
Well, we started kind of steady in the overnight trade, kind of weakened up a little bit. From a producer or trader's point of view, there's a little discouragement from the fact that we're looking at some fairly cold weather here this week. In past history, we've seen the market move higher due to the fact it slows down transportation and increases feed usage. But the forecasters are looking for some aggressive temperatures to the upside as we move into next week. So the market's just a little lower on the anticipation of some better weather next week. Also, too, we're seeing a chance of some better weather in northern Brazil, where it's been extremely dry. The eastern part of Brazil, the central part is still going to be a little dry, but for the most part, they do have a shot of some moisture. And even the wet areas of Argentina are expected to dry out for a few days. Ideas are that maybe the forecast is changing in the southern hemisphere, and it could help these beans as they move more into their critical growing stage, and also maybe produce a better weather forecast for the second crop in the southern hemisphere. Then lastly, too, with the government so-called reopened here for 3 weeks, the term today, I guess, is USDA data dump. See how much dump data they put onto the marketplace in through here. We are going to supposedly go ahead and have a February crop report, and I think they're going to revise or have the January one put out at the same time. And I'm not quite sure on the details on what's that, but they are back to work, and we should have some monthly and some bigger numbers come out here next Friday.
Yeah, so that crop report, as you said, is scheduled for Friday. That's the 8th day of March, so we will get that update. And I suppose they'll, at some point, dump out the USDA crop production reports from January. That would have been the final numbers. Most were expecting that that would be supportive to the marketplace, especially for corn. Do you think that time has passed now, or is there a possibility yet?
I think that's the underlying supportive feature. I continue to believe we're just range bound. You know, the big range bound has been intact since last June. Then we sort of consolidated a narrow trading range here over the last 2 months, but there's plenty of grain out there to keep a lid on prices, but yet there's some decent demand underneath the marketplace to support it on breaks. And I just don't see a big move up or a big move down here until we run into a little bit more fears of the southern hemisphere as far as a dock strike, port strike, or harvest delays, or else we run into some adverse weather here in the U.S., such as a too wet spring or too dry weather later in the growing season. It just feels like we're just kind of locked in this range until something happens somewhere else to give the trade reason to be bullish or bearish more than what we've seen here in the last 2, 3, 4 months.
One of those things, I suppose, could be the trade negotiations with China. Does the do the traders have a view of that this week?
Yeah, they're still on. It was on-off type media news there for a while, but the negotiations are going to go on. I believe most of the analysts are in the belief that we will see an extension of those meetings as long as we see some positive rhetoric back and forth, that they've extended to another 90 days past this March 2nd deadline. In return, the grain trade's looking at maybe a little bit more of a commodity grain purchase to show good faith. We'll see if that happens. But the problem is that these sales are basically not soon enough to help the beans. These boats are going to be moving to the southern hemisphere before you know it, and we're still going to have plenty of old crop around. The sales that we've seen so far, the 5 million metric tons, I believe that was just kind of it was good. We'll take it. But I believe it's kind of hedging their bet in case there will be some problems in the southern hemisphere, such as dock strike, port strike, or that famous road down there, BR, whatever it is, ran into a muddy situation again. So we'll see what happens. The thing about China is they're still concerned about the African swine fever and the consumption rate there on the feed needs in that country. And that's kind of slowing down the bullish enthusiasm.
Hey, thanks so much for taking so much time with me today. We appreciate it. And you and Pete, stay warm there.
Yeah, we're off to Gordyville here this week. So if the Gordyville Farm Show, be sure to stop by. We'll need to give away gloves or something this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Could be a cold one. Thanks so much. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Market Report. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Tegwin O'Brien. He's the Marketing and Outreach Manager for the Land Connection and helping to organize an organic grain conference and trade show that'll take place right here in Urbana-Champaign on February the 13th and 14th out at the iHotel and Conference Center. That's just to the south of the State Farm Center, what we used to call the Assembly Hall. Tegwin, thank you so much for being with us. Tell me about this conference and why it's being put together.
So this is the third year that we've had the conference. It started out of a need from farmers in the area that were interested in transitioning, but really were unsure about next steps, processes, what the markets looked like, and how to go about transitioning properly so that they could get certified and sell at higher price points. So now we're 3 years in, the conference is expanding, and we are doing more work with presenting current research from U of I and other university professors who are doing work with things like nitrogen management on the farms, nitrogen fixing corn, participatory breeding networks, and we're including more work with what does it mean to be organic? What are the core of the organic standards, USDA add-on labels, legal issues for organic growers, organic markets and budgets, and issues with tariffs and fraudulent imports and trade. So it's really expanded the scope of the conference over the last 3 years.
A couple of things that I missed last summer, and I know there was one here and then one in Wisconsin, where you were looking at breeding for particularly organic corn hybrids and what their special needs might be.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be, you've mentioned there'll be some presentations there. I assume there's quite a bit of interest in that particular topic.
Yeah, Dr. Cameron Ugarte, along with her team, did participatory breeding and testing network studies. They did a presentation earlier on sort of the process of their work, and that was last summer here in Urbana. They will be presenting on all of the high-yielding cultivars that they discovered and as well as the overall crop performance. They'll share yield and root response to gradients of soil fertility. And they did that on 13 on-farm locations. So they'll be presenting those results. And I think that's something a lot of local and regional farmers would be very interested in.
And Dr. Ugarte and Martin Bone, along with Michelle Wander and a couple of others, will be there,
yep.
All working on that, all from the University of Illinois. Michelle Wander also will be involved in the nitrogen discussion, too. That one looks like that one might be pretty interesting. And it ranges out to some other universities and the Argonne Lab and a couple of other places.
Yeah, that's very true. She partnered with University of Vermont, eOrganics, which is an online learning platform that seeks to nationally spread sustainable and organic research being done in universities across the country so that professors and farmers can share in sort of the delivery and the discovery of the work. It'll actually be a double session. It'll be a workshop where they discuss the actual project and its impact. And then they'll actually, I think they're going to be doing sort of an online farm-by-farm interactive presentation that'll allow the farmers to sort of be more involved and determining what are some of the management factors on their individual farms.
And one other one that I'd like to highlight, meeting the needs of organic buyers. You mentioned premiums that might be available for organic produce. And Wyatt Muse, a name that our listeners are likely familiar with, used to join us from the Andersons,
mm-hmm.
Right here in Champaign, and he works for Clarkson Grain now, will be moderating a panel looking at what organic buyers need. And he'll actually have somebody on the panel from the Andersons. Can you tell me what the point there is?
So he'll basically be running that panel, and he's running it more as an outside source who knows all of these people from the Andersons, Clarkson Grain, Anders Gerda from Pipeline Foods will also be there, Barb Barkall from All Star Trading, and he'll basically be giving the audience a sense of what these buyers are looking for, what their needs are, how you can get in contact with them, and what producers should really be taking into consideration when they're producing and harvesting.
For those who are interested, how do they register?
The best way to register is going to be on our website. It's thelandconnection.org/OGC2019. If you have any trouble with the website or you just want to register over the phone, you're more than welcome to call our office. We're open 5 days a week from 8:30 to 5:30, and our number is 217-840-2128.
And is there a cost?
There is a cost. So early bird registration ends on January 31st. The pre-conference workshop on navigating the organic certification process is currently $45, and it will go up to $55 after January 31st. The main conference day is currently $65, and after January 31st, it will go up to $80. And then if you want to attend both days, there's a whole conference package price of $99 before January 31st, and that will go up to $122 in February.
Okay, again, that's the 31st. That's this coming Thursday. If you want to get yourself registered, look up thelandconnection.org, and you'll be able to find it there. That is the Organic Grain Conference and Trade Show for 2019. Hey, Tedwin, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Todd.
Tedwin O'Brien is a marketing and outreach manager for the Land Connection.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Up next, we'll talk with Dan Jennings. He headed up a livestock conference for 4-H'ers over the weekend. In fact, I caught up with him in the Decatur Conference Center at the Holiday Inn there and asked him just exactly what the 4-H'ers were up to.
Well, this is our 2019 Junior Youth Livestock Conference. We got about a little over 100 kids, 107 kids here. They're all 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. And we put on about a day and a half. They came in this morning. We have them all day and all night, overnight, and then tomorrow morning till about noon.
What's the purpose?
We have a livestock ambassador team made up of 6 to 21-year-olds. They're kind of our mentors, and they do the teaching, and we put on a series of stations and themes for them. So in this room, they're working with meat science, ultrasound, retail cuts. Another room, they'll be going to another room where they'll rotate around about 25 minutes and learn how to do suturing, giving injections. They'll be doing sort of dissecting. I think they're dissecting an eyeball, going through the parts. And then we have a repro room where they're looking at semen. They're doing simulation with in vitro fertilization and going through equipment and also different reproductive tracks. We have some hog tracks and some cow tracks over there where they're simulating artificial insemination with some rods and stuff out in the trays. And then later tonight, we'll do some leadership exercises and some games and stuff with them and some more seminars tomorrow morning and a keynote speaker and send them home.
What's the hope in the end? What do you hope for these folks? Why do we, as Extension, teach all of this stuff?
It's great for the livestock ambassador team, as teens, as teachers, to kind of take ownership of it. The young kids, they get excited. It's a chance for them to learn some of the science and glove up and get hands-on with some of this stuff. And it's a great way to meet other kids from other parts of the state. So a lot of them have not been out of their county, or they're only in their own 4-H club, so they can meet other kids with like interests across the state, develop some leadership skills, and see what's offered at a mastery level beyond their county.
How did they get involved to begin with? How were they chosen to come here?
We advertise it across the state. It went to all the county extension offices. It was in the newspaper, AgriNews and stuff, and on our Facebook and webpage. We can only take so many. I think we tried to cut it off at 100. We had a waiting list. I think we have a little over 100, but we had a waiting list. But we just advertise it, and they sign up through their local office and send the registration in.
Yeah, I talked to one young lady. She came from a hog farm, but I heard somebody else ask, what do your parents do for a living? She said, well, my dad's a construction worker and my mom's a baker. So they're from all kinds of backgrounds, apparently.
Yes, they are. I mean, that's the great thing about it. And they kind of represent what we see in our whole animal science project. I'm in 4-H anymore. It used to be very agrarian and rural. Where kids were, you know, parents were farming for a living and they raised livestock for a living. And as time goes on, we have more and more of these kids that are, a percentage of them live on the farms, a percentage of them do it kind of as a hobby, that are on a farmette. Some are even living in small towns in the city and can have an animal somewhere else and take care of it. So they come from all facts of life. And some of the science and things that we're teaching here are, we're not expecting them to go home and raise livestock for a living. It's stuff that they need to know for regardless of what they do.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting for them. I mean, you have a hog carcass here. They get to take it apart. They get to try to figure out how to put that carcass back together. You actually have tracks, reproductive tracks from several different animals, and they can see how artificial insemination works.
Yeah, and what we're doing here, especially on the meat science thing, is really neat because if none of them raise livestock for a living, they're all going to be consumers. They're all going to go into a restaurant and order a piece of meat. They're all going to go grocery shopping and buy meat, knowing the difference between quality grades and fat and what those cuts are and the eating qualities and stuff. That's really important.
Tell me what they're doing with the ultrasound.
The ultrasound's a machine we use, and it's interesting. Most of these machines, it's like the same machines that they use in the hospitals for women that are pregnant when they go in an ultrasound for their babies. They usually get, when they buy new ones, we buy them used, and they get recalibrated, and they just learn about high frequency sound waves and how that works and how that gets transmitted as an image back. And we can use it for preg checking. We can use it for measuring ribeye loin areas. We use it for measuring back fat. There's a whole host of uses for that outside of humans, and we're still finding more uses for them today. So it's kind of it's not a new technology, but it's one that, because of the cost of the machine, we have one here today, and all the kids will get hands-on experience using that and seeing how that works.
Dan, thanks so much.
You betcha. Thank you, Tom.
Dan Jennings is an Extension Educator for University of Illinois Extension. This is the Closing Market Report for a Monday afternoon. John Davis now joins us from Risk Pulse in Chicago. John, thanks for being with us. Let's start with the cold, bitter cold that's coming into our part of the world. Where's it making its way from, and how bad is it going to be?
Well, it's actually coming from Siberia and then making its way over the North Pole, coming through Canada, and then literally goes directly over the Midwest. So basically, this is coming from Siberia, and the core of this will be moving directly into Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois by the time we get to late Tuesday and Wednesday. So it's literally Siberian air making it right to the middle of the Midwest.
And how cold are we talking?
Extreme. We're talking about levels here that we haven't seen in a couple of decades. And so not only from an absolute standpoint, with temperatures down to minus 15, minus 20, minus 25 in northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin, but the zero line in this situation will go all the way down to the Ohio River Valley, even south of there somewhat. But the other thing that makes this unique is the duration of cold. For example, in areas of northern Illinois, our all-time record below zero is a little bit over 100 hours. If we don't break that this week, it's going to be very close. So your duration of extreme cold is going to be phenomenally impressive, really across all areas of the Midwest and Great Lakes.
How cold are we talking about in some of the Dakotas, Minnesota, where generally it's a whole lot colder than it is where we are?
And it will be in this situation, too. So up in those areas, you're talking about low temperatures of minus 35, minus 40, and they will have wind chills of minus 65 to minus 70. So even in the Dakotas and Minnesota, this is big-time stuff, and it's extremely rare.
And it comes with wind as well, I understand.
It comes with a lot of wind. So the snow that's in place right now will begin blowing around, and that's really late tonight and tomorrow. And so we'll have whiteout conditions across a lot of the Midwest. So not only do you have the bitter cold, but very strong winds, kind of whiteout conditions in those areas that have snow. And that will be the beginning of it. Then you get into the intense cold on Wednesday night and early Thursday. So it's about a 3.5 to 4 day event. First, you know, cold and blowing snow, and then extreme record type setting cold as we go into the middle of the week. And then by late in the week and over the weekend, then that air mass moves off to the east.
Turn your attention to some warmer climes. We've talked a lot about the problems that have had in South America. What are conditions like there today?
Things are improving. So in the dry areas of northeastern Brazil, which has been an ongoing issue for much of this growing season, rainfall is increasing across those areas. We had some activity over the weekend. More activity is on tap as we go through the next week or two. So the dry areas of Brazil are shrinking, and the situation is improving.
Hey, John, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us for the day.
Oh, my pleasure, Todd.
John Davis is with Risk Pulse. He's in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do get yourself set for some really cold weather for a long duration over the next several days. It's important to make sure you take care of the pets and the animals and the livestock and yourself, the house as well. So get everything set up for below zero temperatures for a very, very long time. I'll be traveling tomorrow to the Illinois Pork Producers Conference. We'll talk to you from there. Have a great afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can always find our programming online at WILLAG.org.